It's 6:02. I'd like to call the meeting back to order. Could we please have the report out of closed session, Mr. Minery?
Report out of closed session is no reportable action.
Thank you. Moving on to public comments for items not on the agenda. The public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes, please. Anybody like to come forward?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I attend sanitation meetings and have for some time. And I've stood in front of this board, and I think I've stood in front of all the district boards and asked for help. I'm doing it one more time because Mr. Hill and his posse of clowns are costing this district money with all the games they're playing. And if this continues, it's going to impact the ratepayers of everyone in the district. Julie Tacker managed to bring Los Osos sewer bills up to about $300. That's what I feel she's trying to do here. What they're trying to do is get Peterson on Grover Beach and Jim to stay on AG, and they're going to run the plan into the ground. Grover and Oceano have a great working relationship, and they're doing a good job. This falls on my representative of Arroyo Grande. And I come here because it's going to affect your ratepayers also. So if you can watch the meetings or attend a meeting, I think some input from other people might be helpful, but this needs to end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shirley Gibson Halcyon, thank you for this opportunity to speak. So I brought the copy of Mr. Brunet's letter because I feel that that it's missing something, and I wrote on there, how does that benefit Oceano? It also bothers me that even though he has the right to write to the sanitation district, I see it as a problem in that it undercuts our representative, Director Austin. And even though you are a resident of Oceano, everyone knows who you are, and so that can color things in their eyes. And so anyway, I don't agree with the letter. So I wanted to make 4 points about how this letter, suggestion does not benefit Oceano Halcyon. Historically, we have been the stepchild of the South County. We have a smaller population. We have a smaller tax base. We're not as upscale as some of our neighboring towns, but we are improving. We're a work in progress. And by its very nature, the sanitation district is a tri-community endeavor. That means three entities equal three representatives, regardless of the population or the tax base. So, I think that is one reason this has worked, because, you know, we're pretty much outmanned by Arroyo and Grover. But I think that having three entities and three representatives rights the ship. It keeps the balance. Number three, Oceano bears the burden of the physical plant. Arroyo doesn't. Grover Beach doesn't. It's us. So right there, we're unique in that respect. I think that trying to add members to the sanitation district is an attempt to slow the work of the sanitation district, to turn it into a big, lengthy, acrimonious debate that in the end does not benefit Oceano community. And lastly, your board has the fiduciary responsibility to move forward the business of the OCSD as well as the sanitation district. And so promoting adding members, are you really taking your responsibility seriously? And I guess my last question for Mr. Brunet is, how do you represent Oceano if you support diluting our power? So thank you very much.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Good evening. Cynthia Replogo with the Oceano Beach Community Association. One of our members who couldn't be here this evening wanted to also express her thanks that you have now upgraded the OCSD website. And she noticed that you have under Community Services a page for non-governmental organizations, and there's no links listed on that page right now. So we were wondering if you might add a link to the Oceano Beach Community Association. Our website is oceanobeach.org. Thank you.
And Madam President, yes. Our only request would be if we could get the contact information emailed into the office, then we'd be glad to do so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Solves that problem. Anyone else? Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Would that be the same for the, say, the Oceano Depot and the Oceano Advisory Council? Could they be linked?
Yeah, for the non-Oceano Depot, for the non-governmental organizations, in terms of OAC, that will be more like on a government page.
Okay.
We wanted to make sure to have placeholders in there, but we haven't. You know, there's a number of aspects to the website haven't been populated yet. So Boys and Girls Club probably should get on there, and, you know, a number of others as well. So, again, be glad to do so. And just work with the different groups.
Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to special presentations and reports. Start with Tony Maricino, field supervisor.
Good evening, board. Tony Maricino. All right, so we continue to do daily rounds, samples, work orders. There was 8 USAs. There was 15. Reason why is because there's a lot of gas mains getting replaced on pier, and you see a lot of work on pier and airport because of the airport bridge project coming up. We had 8 customer service calls. We're still continuing to replace meters. A lot of projects that are coming up. We've been working on that. There was an event last week. We actually thought it was a water main that broke on pier and airport. Come to find out, Jason's on vacation. I was in Sepulveda, VA, and Casey figured out it was wastewater. And he handled everything on his own, got a contractor out there. Everything went really smooth. It is a reportable SSO. It was about 20 gallons. Handled it very well, took charge of the entire situation, and I think I made it back by noon or so, and everything was just rolling right as if, you know, no hiccups. It was really, really good to see. I never doubted them one bit. I don't doubt the field staff. Any one of the guys can handle themselves that way. It got repaired, already paved, in and out, and all taken care of. Continued valve turning. Doesn't sound like much, but for some reason we're really busy. We got a lot of projects up and coming. Between water mains getting replaced and paving with the county and you name it.
As usual, they've been great. Sorry to pop this one on you, Tony, but I just heard that there was with PG&E or the gas company working on Air Park Drive Bridge and Pier Avenue, that there was apparently water running down this Pier Avenue today.
Yeah. So, we got called out by MGE, who was doing underground for a vault. That was my understanding. When we showed up, there was 2 4-inch ACP lines, transite, that they actually cut into because they didn't know what it was. One was empty and one had fiber optics in it.
So they weren't our water lines.
No, there's no water that I'm aware of.
There was some visual observations by people, though, that there was water running down the street. And I don't know if we had seen that there was a lot or a little bit or...
I don't know.
Okay.
I wasn't informed of anything.
Yeah, I didn't hear of any events either, so...
I'll definitely let you know if it pertains to us, but everything is going smooth as far as I know.
Yeah.
And we'll have Tony back up here for a while during the hearing item later today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Fire Chief's not here. Mr. Ogren, I believe you're up.
Madam President, members of the board, a couple of items for the general manager report. And one is that now we did receive the bids that we're going to be going through on the Air Park Drive utility relocation project. But, you know, especially Tony has been extremely responsive in looking at those cost estimates and what it would take to self-perform. As he indicated, there's a lot going on, and that's that particular project has put a lot of demand on his time, and I appreciate his responses. The other item I want to touch on is that I did meet with the five cities fire authority fire chief, Chief Lieberman, today, as well as the city managers, Matthew Bronson with Grover Beach, and Jim Bergman with Aurora Grande. And we discussed what your board had approved at our last meeting, which is the concepts of the fiscal year 18-19 Five Cities Fire Authority budget and an agreement that is necessary in order to address the changes that, you know, we're looking at next fiscal year. And overall, I want to characterize that discussion as being pretty positive. There was a lot of good feedback. I felt like we were all on the same page when we walked out of the meeting. After getting back, though, I got an email from Chief Lieberman that was a bit more cautious about what we had been discussing. So I emphasized to him that time is really of the essence. And I've asked legal counsel Minnery to reach out to the attorneys for the two cities tomorrow in order to help move timing along on that particular issue. So again, overall, I thought it was a good discussion, but we do have very tight timing between now and next fiscal year, and you know, some significant work needs to get done, and I hope that message carries forward to next week's Five Cities Fire Authority meeting as well. And that's all I have.
Okay. Moving on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Let's start with Colwell.
Okay.
See if you guys guess it. Go this way.
I attended with Director Angelo, the Water Resources Advisory Committee at a seminar on water law, and it was kind of interesting because it was scheduled to be a two-hour seminar on water law. To cover water law in 2 hours is a Herculean task, and even though this seminar was extended by a half hour to 4:30, we did not make too much of a dent in it. I will just make only one observation about it, and that's probably the most recognized water law, water right, and that is the overland owner. The owner of the ground has access to water that he can get below that property, and he can use that for whatever is appropriate use of that land. He could not, or she could not, use that to wash the dishes of a neighboring community. And that's the overland right that is the basic water right. And all of the other rules and regulations and laws are various offshoots of that. And that includes the right of the state or the communities and municipalities to make their own rules and regulations as affect water rights. Now, Director Angelo might be able to expound on this beyond me.
Not really. It's pretty much laid out, you know, what you can and cannot do, and like you said, the water purveyors that have water underneath their property, which I kind of knew about that. It kind of just popped into my head later on. It was kind of interesting. The people that put it on were at sometimes kind of humorous, and it was like this competition of who was going to ask what is what I kind of saw. You know, the one to jump in after the other one, and then it's kind of a play off of each other. But it was rather interesting because they did discuss quite a bit of stuff. Wasn't a lot of questions asked in general, but it was interesting. I'm glad I went. It was fun.
May I add in a little?
Yes.
So now they were all attorneys on the panel, right?
Yep.
But you found them to be a little bit humorous?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good sign, hey, Jeff?
Yeah, they were friendly. Let's put it that way instead of...
Trying to keep everybody awake.
Yeah.
So I was not able to attend the meeting because I know I was working on something very important for the district at the time. But I have been able to listen to about half the tape so far. And I thought that the discussions were really good.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to do is take the tape, they're not tapes anymore, are they? They're just simply audio recordings. We're going to take the bits and bytes, and we're going to slice them up into smaller sections so that nobody has to go listen for 2.5 hours. I think there was 5 components to the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll break it into those different components at a minimum. And then while listening to it, we're going to create a PowerPoint around it. And that way, we'll post it to our website, so if somebody wants to pop it up, as they're listening, they'll also be able to view something, you know, that walks through the different items. Like, you know, now they're talking about overlying groundwater rights or prescriptive rights or appropriative rights and those things. At least for the first, you know, half that I have listened to, I thought it was a really good discussion. And so, wish I could have been there, but...
It was a good discussion, they had an attorney from the State Water Board, and then they had 2 attorneys from private practice.
Mm-hmm.
One that represents one side and one that represented the other side, most generally. And that's where we got the sparring and some of the humor.
So Jeff knows Wayne Lemieux, and I've had a chance to work with him, but I think from an adversarial point of view on some groundwater litigation in the past. But he was really good to work with, even though he was working on the other side. The thing that I found most interesting is that, from what I've heard so far, is that there was a groundwater exportation ordinance that was being circulated in our county, seeking to get put on the ballot, and it's since been withdrawn. I know I provided some input just from my own personal perspective as to some of the details that would have been challenging in our county. So I don't know why it was withdrawn, but I think that in general there was good intent. I heard Mr. Lemieux state is that, you know, he spoke to it, and then he said because it was seeking to ban exportation of water, he goes, and then a bunch of other things too. And he goes, now it's been pulled out, maybe because of those other things. So, again, I think that there was good intent behind the individuals who were circulating it, but they got into a certain level of detail that was, sometimes they have unintended consequences. But then that ended up going into a discussion amongst the panelists a little bit about when you have a basin, what is it that's good ideas or bad ideas? And Mr. Lemieux first came out and he said, anything exported outside of a basin is just a bad idea. The other attorneys said, well, we're not sure that we agree that it's really based on the facts and circumstances of the particular basin. And then at that point in time, I think is where I really liked his comment, because he backed off of his original position, and he said, well, let me clarify. If we're talking about transfers inside of a basin, he believes that they should generally be okay, and the burden of proof should be on somebody who opposes them. But if you're going to export water out of the basin, the burden of proof should be on the people who want to export up front before that water is transferred outside the basin. And so it was interesting as listening to them kind of do their back and forth, and, you know, they clarified comments and had a really good discussion. The other thing that was kind of interesting was that every single one of them and the county and the chair of the Water Resource Advisory Committee must have said numerous times, the opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals. Except for Lemieux, who said, well, if you want to pay me today, then I'll be glad to give you a paid opinion.
Maybe we could get Jeff to include that disclaimer every board meeting.
So. Okay, anything else? Moving on then to Vice President Austin. I know she had a meeting.
Yes, I had two meetings of the sanitation district, so I'll talk about the first one, April 4th, our usual regular meeting. And it was, we had our usual business items. We did some, we approved a couple change orders for the redundancy project, the consultants. We got an update on our audits that we've been waiting on, and we should have it presented to our board on May 18th. That's the date we've been given for the final audit, and then they'll start the next one. We're getting a new law firm, a new attorney that will be assisting our attorney, Mr. Trujillo. And then, let's see, on our agenda items, we had a there have been some time people in the audience have been asking to agendize the district, looking into the changing the makeup of the board from 3 members to 5 members. So I thought it was a good time to put it on the agenda and get the input. And so we heard a lot of public comment for and against, and I expressed my feelings that I didn't think it was the right time to even to talk about that. We're right in the middle of looking for a new administrator, and I questioned the reasons why it's even been suggested to change the membership. So I also stated that we have a lot more important things on our agenda with the redundancy and the recycling water. So, and the main thing is we need to hear from Oceano residents. The plant is in our community. We are the ones impacted. So, something that I said that we could bring up later, if it wanted to come up later, but for right now, I just think that any attempt to try to lessen Oceano's representation is not going to be met well. So, that was about it on that meeting. And then we had a special meeting April 7th. It was one item. It was a closed session. We interviewed candidates for the administrator job. So there was no action taken. We had made no decisions. Strictly interview the candidates. And the outcomes and everything will be on a future agenda on that. And that's it.
How many people did you have?
Interview?
Yeah.
6.
I should add in, President White that and board members, that I was invited to sit in on the interviews, as well as the 2 city managers who were invited as well. I guess they had other things, but I did attend as well and sat in on the interviews.
Thank you.
I did have one question. It was just Saturday at 8 o'clock, totally understand, because you have a lot of candidates that have jobs. Why was it in San Luis Obispo?
It's held in San Luis Obispo. We had, obviously, you've got your letter about the Brown Act. So the one of the candidates needed to be done with Skype. And a facility, we needed to have a facility that had the TV screen, so like OCSD, you can Skype here, but we'd be sitting all around a little computer screen. Mm. So Grover Beach had that facility, but their room was busy, and there was no mention of it from the word Randy, but they had it. So we have to, the consultant got a place as close as she could to hold the meeting that had the equipment that we needed, so that's why it was done.
And I know you know that when the consultant had called me and asked me if I was willing to participate, and then I called Vice President Austin because, of course, I didn't want to show up and surprise her or anything. So I had a couple of conversations, you know, midweek, and I was recently asked as to, you know, whether a specific individual asked me if we had Skyping capability, and I don't know who asked me that during that week. I just know that the consultant may have done it, Vice President Austin might have done it, but we don't have the projectors, you know, and we don't have the screens and everything, and over the big TV. So, you know, I was like, well, not really.
People from out of town drove a long distance, and it was at 8 o'clock in the morning, so they were there that evening, and so it made it convenient. You know, there was a boardroom with all the equipment we needed, and it was right there on the...
Yeah. I also get very tentative about, in order to get our internet access, we have to give up our Wi-Fi password, and I pretty much don't allow that on any situation other than contractors who are working for us, so AGP has access, or other governmental agencies. So to have a consultant come in, I would have been cautious about that, but that my response was very quick, just because we don't have the big screen TV or the projectors and stuff like that. So
yeah, we were told on Saturday that Aurora Grandy did have the facility to do it, but no representative from Aurora Grandy didn't inform us of that during the times that it was, you know, talked about. So we did what had to be done, and it was done. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, I have nothing. You have anything else, Andrew?
Nothing for me.
Okay, let's ask for public comment on items on the agenda. I mean, items discussed by the committee reports. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Patty Walsh again. It was a shame that my representative didn't put forth, because Ron Arnoldson from Grover Beach mentioned on Thursday that there was going to be a special meeting, so there was more than enough time for Mr. Hill to have contacted the city, found out if a room was available, and let Linda know. That didn't happen. That's part of the games that's cost, and, you know, and then his groupies show up, and they disrupt things, and I'm wondering, are we going to get somebody hired if this continues? You know, it's got to stop. The name-calling, all this needs to stop. But thank you.
Thank
you. It's just childish. We've been down that road before.
It was a setup from them.
Okay. Moving on to consent agenda, I think. Do we have any action as amended?
Madam President, yeah. Public comment on the consent agenda.
Oh, public comment on the consent agenda. Thank you. Public comment on the consent agenda. Seeing nobody come forward. What's the pleasure?
I do need to call. I need to abstain from 8A. I was absent.
Okay. Do we want to do them separately then?
We don't need to. We can just note that Director Brunet is abstaining from 8A.
Okay. And the... approval for the intent to serve just looks like a remodel.
Correct.
Yeah. Well.
I'll make a motion. We approve the consent agenda, item A, B, C, and D, with Andrew abstaining from item A.
And as amended.
As amended.
I'd second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Carries 5-0. Moving on to business item, public comment on business items? That would be 9, A, B, C, D, and E. Yeah.
Hi, Cynthia Replogle. I'm going to put on a different hat now and talk to you as vice chair of our county's chapter of Surf Rider. First of all, it appears to me that this ordinance was passed in 1991 concerning fireworks. That's 27 years ago, and there haven't been any updates to it. I think it might be time for a refresh of this. There is a cleanup fee of $500, again, not changed from 1991, but that applies only to the sale location being properly cleaned up. And I notice in violations there's nothing in here about cleanup generally after the fireworks are used. As a longtime Surf Rider volunteer, I can tell you that fireworks create a huge litter problem, especially on the beaches. In fact, we call our beach cleanups on July 5th the morning after mess cleanups. Firework litter can harm our environment, can harm sea life, and is unsightly on our beaches. So I would like to suggest that you consider updating this ordinance to require people to clean up after their fireworks activities so that we don't have such a huge litter issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anything else?
I think it'd be difficult for the vendors to clean up.
Well, so we will... President White took public comment on all the business items up front. And so as we go through it, we'll address all those comments.
Okay.
You're just ready to go.
Okay, I'll call for 9A, approval of a recommendation to set May 16th, 2018 as the application deadline for fireworks permits.
As the public led, yes, that's right. It is consistent with prior years. There's two things I was thinking about, one comment, but really we have two now. With respect to cleanup requirements, when the permits issued by Five Cities Fire Authority, they do include conditions associated with cleaning up. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that they've historically split the district into a number of different quadrants and then given each of the stands an area, each of the nonprofits an area that they need to go the next day and clean up. That obviously doesn't include the beach. So whether it requires consideration of modification of the ordinance or working with Five Cities Fire Authority associated with the conditions that are established for each of the vendors, we can certainly look into the concerns addressed by the public.
Could I add something to that? I believe it is against the law or the rules and regulations of beaches and parks that any fireworks are allowed on the beach. Even safe and sane fireworks are not allowed on the beach. So I don't know how we could enforce something in another area that is totally, I mean, in Oceania you can use safe and sane fireworks, but you can't on the beach. So I don't know how we could bring that under control in any possible way.
So
we can't enforce whether there are fireworks on the beach. And incidentally, there are wonderful fireworks on the beach every 4th of July. Massive numbers of them. I love them. But what about the possibility of a slight increase in the permit fee, you know, whether $50 or whatever per vendor, and even donating that money to some good organization like the Surf Riders to defray some of the costs, or they might be able to use those funds to advertise or encourage people to come by giving them a sandwich or whatever.
Well, but then we're hurting another nonprofit.
About two different things.
We're hurting another nonprofit that's trying to raise money. We're taking from one nonprofit to give to another.
But we're issuing the permit for the
community,
the person that sells the fireworks, the group that sells it, and we charge a refundable cleaning deposit for their cleanup of their things. So as far as the community, which I know can get very messy and stuff, I mean, I don't think we have any way to control that other than send out a thing, clean up your fireworks, but we can't charge these people more. They're all nonprofits.
So a couple of...
Make it be proactive with, because I know it's not good, and I know the beach gets a mess, but we don't have any control over it. You know.
So a couple of thoughts. In addition to reaching out for Five Cities Fire, I can reach out to Dina Bellman with County Parks because, I'm sorry, State Parks, because yes, they have that enforcement responsibility. We don't know if fireworks are being brought in from the valley or from Oceano.
But they're down there.
Yeah, but you know, one thought is that we could ask the vendors to put some signs up on their if Dina says, look, it's not legal to have them on the beach, we could put a sign on the vendors to inform people and help out a little bit on public information on that. I think that's pretty harmless.
And clean up your street.
Yeah.
Clean up your street after putting notice.
Yeah.
There's always a huge sign right on the entrance to the beach.
Says no fireworks.
No fireworks. All of it's prohibited. And I think they advertise something like either a $2,000 or $5,000 fine for any fireworks.
It's so hard that they can't enforce, but they try. But it's,
Well, and then the other thing is that because of the funding of the franchise fees for garbage in Oceano. If we want to do anything special after the 4th of July to make sure everything's cleaned up, you know, we have the funding to do that without having to, you know, have the nonprofits who are the vendors, you know, pick their pocket on any of that. Yeah.
I thought we were just helping the nonprofits to remain that way.
Every little bit helps.
Well, I wonder if there would be any like street sweeper or anything, an extra. I don't know if that would be effective.
That might be something we could
I think, you know, we have a number of options. I think it's really good input, and we'll make sure to coordinate with fire and state parks and public information. And again, we've got a contractor on call to help with cleanup efforts if we need to. And you know, I agree that Oceano has historically really loved their fireworks, and I do hear every year about messes that are left behind. I've gotten calls from Grover and other people who are like, you know, Oceano is a wild town.
Excuse me, so is Arroyo Grande.
Yeah.
Oh, some of the best fireworks are inland. I watch them at the beach and inland. Grover and AG have got fantastic fireworks.
Co-housing. In the co-housing area, there's always a nice show every year.
So, again, I think good input, and we've got something to work on there. Now, the action item for today is specifically to set May 16th as the application due date sort of that's the singular purpose of today. I did want to note, although, that, you know, you had a representative of the California Highway Patrol come to a prior meeting, and when we look back at the ordinance, the way it's currently written is that you do have up to 5 permits that you can issue.
Do we have 4 now?
We've been doing 4, and it provides preference to those who did, you know, had booths in the prior year. So as it stands right now, I don't see the need for any changes in order to accommodate or, you know, consider to the degree that your board wants for the.
Did he get the information to apply by May 16th?
We will make sure that he does, but I'm
not, because they've been doing a really good job around Oceano.
Yeah.
The Boys and Girls Club have also sold in the past. I don't see them on this list.
I believe that the Boys and Girls Club has been the beneficiary of some of the.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Yeah. Well, I'd entertain a motion. Let's move it forward if we want to.
Well, I would move that we select May 16 as the recommended deadline for application of the fireworks permits.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to 9B. review of the district's budget status of March 31st, 2018. Ms. Cassiola.
President White, members of the board, we have the quarter three budget status for your review. Attached to your agenda was the budget worksheets that have been adjusted for the board-approved adjustment budget adjustments and the encumbrances that have occurred during the fiscal year. The overall budgets are tracking consistently with the 2017-18 budget, and no budget adjustments are needed at this time. As the district has been managing the budget conservatively for the first three quarters to see what savings can assist with costs that are coming up for the district, like Air Park Drive, the Highway 1 utility relocation program, the Five Cities Fire Authority, the emergency generator project, and other infrastructure items that are coming up. I was just going to go through really quickly the general fund. Revenues are as expected. The first installment of property taxes at the end of 2017 came through, and so we have 70% incurred, and the rest are to come at the end of this month. Expenditures, there are a few items running high. Most of them are the normal front-loaded items that we see each budget review, and those are the LAFCO payment, the PERS UAL payment, the boot allowance, the membership expense, and the liability assurance. Other expenditures that have been running over are the administrative wages and salary, communications, clothing, and other utility billing mailing expenses. And these have been expensed to the general fund and will be allocated out to the operating funds at the end of the year, as there are sufficient funds budgeted in the operating funds to cover these costs. So then we have fire, which is all on track. It has the budget adjustment for the SCBA equipment that we gave. Lighting fund has savings against the budget with all the new LED lights that have been installed by the Energy Watch team at the county. The facilities fund has the rent from the sheriff's station all on track with the Five Cities Fire Authority rent that we receive. The equipment fund expenditures are all on track and also remain consistent. Then the fire and sewer water and sewer revenues are coming in higher than expected, and that's because we've had five of the six billing periods already in our fiscal year. Water revenues will be touched on more in item C. We've had revenues related to new development. They look low on the budget, but that's only because we put them in deposits from developers, and then at the year end we close out which developers have actually connected with a meter in the ground, and those are the ones we move into revenue. So currently they look low, but at our year-end analysis, we should see revenues from new development. The garbage fund, we have the landfill savings payment that come in every year, and we paid One Cool Earth for the Earth Genius Education Program at the Oceano Elementary School, and the savings in the garbage fund will continue to cover that program. So with that, we would be happy to answer any questions, line items that stuck out.
Good to me. How's that program at the elementary school doing? Do we know?
Seems to be doing well. I went and volunteered for one of the dinners that One Cool Earth put out.
They have carrots and radishes.
They had we ate tacos, but they were made instead of meat. They were made out of walnuts.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Ooh. That sounds good.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
Tree bark for dessert.
Chocolate covered tree bark. Just to add quickly to Ms. Cassiola's discussion, the elephant in the room is a little bit of the cost associated our emergency project for the water line underneath the Oceano Lagoon. We'll be touching on that later, as well as increased costs associated with the Air Park Drive utility relocation project. Both of those projects, I anticipate, those additional costs are fundable within the water fund budget for for the water fund costs. Air Park Drive also has some sewer fund related costs. And the basic reason is because we haven't been taking any deliveries of state water. The budget analysis shows that we're 75% through the year, and we've incurred 75% of our state water costs. But essentially, we've incurred all of our state water costs for the current year because we're not taking any deliveries. So like last year, we would anticipate somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 in savings because we're not taking delivery of state water. And that dollar amount should be sufficient. Very confident on the additional costs that we're seeing on Air Park Drive, as well as some of the early cost estimates that we're getting in on replacing the water line underneath Oceano Lagoon. So Carrie had mentioned that we have some budget items that are coming up, but again, we're going to have some good savings there. So that provides a little bit of comfort, at least.
In the right pocket, out the left. You save, yes, and save and save, and then.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why you have funds.
You know, it's always good if we can cover it with current year budget rather than having to go into reserves. And so that's what we're anticipating at this time.
Okay. Anything? Any questions? Any public comment? No. Moving on to 9C, review and discuss annual adjustments to water charges pursuant to Ordinance 2015-01 and consideration of decreasing post-drought consumption charges.
So, Madam President, members of the board, what I want to do is start with Exhibit C.
Exhibit C.
And that would be page 35 of 69. And what this page reflects is we're going to be sending out the annual notice to our residents, and the idea is who we normally send to our bills to. And I guess that's actually the property owners. So this Exhibit C, and that's going to go out on Monday, and so Exhibit C reflects what the annual notice is. And what we show here are in the very far left is the different components to water bills that include the base rate, the base charge depends on what size the meter is, consumption charges, and then the Lopez supplemental charge. There's also a couple of other charges in there. What's unique about this year and why I wanted to bring some special attention to it is that we actually have two columns that reflect 2017 billing. The first one, which is labeled the bi-monthly 2017 rates, are the rates that went into effect this time last year. And then in October 11th, 2017, as part of the post-drought transition, your board adopted that 10% transition to the post-drought rates. And so the column that's identified as 2017 rate reduction approved on 10/11/2017 shows that some of those consumption charges went down, slightly went down. And so it's that column then that we're really basing the increases for the consumer price index. And then the next couple columns show what our automatic adjustments are. The consumer price index increase for 2017 was 3.398%. And in prior years, it was running around 2. For 2017, it was 2.395. But there is no additional increases associated with Lopez water or state water. Lopez water, there's not, because our 2017 increase was less than the CPI adjustment of 3.398%. And then state water, we're still well below the baseline that was established when the rates were adopted in 2015. And then the final column then shows the rates that will go into effect in May, the May-July billing period. So the current billing period is still going to be at the rates approved on October 11th. And then it's the billing for May to July, and the customers will get their bills in August. That will see the 3.398% increase. If we flip back then to Exhibit B on the prior page, what that illustrates is the need to actually track now multiple numbers. The very first top are the drought emergency consumption charges. And so we take those numbers and we make the annual adjustments based on the consumer price index, Lopez, and state water changes. The very bottom box is the post-drought consumption charges. And the importance of both of those is that they tie back to the ordinance that was adopted in 2015. The middle box is the one that shows where we're at right now and that we're starting to make the transition from the emergency rates to the post-drought rates. And all that transition only affects the consumption charges because in the drought, we were trying to promote reductions in consumption, so those rates were higher. And in a post-drought, the consumption charges go down. So that's all that that illustrates is we track the emergency rates, we track the post-drought rates, and right now we're in the 10% middle ground. So we're doing a lot of calculations to make sure that we're maintaining in compliance. The last thing that I really want to cover right now is this supplemental handout that was passed around. Carrie had mentioned that in her budget report, the revenues were looking high because we billed 5 out of 6 billing periods, which is about 83%, and we're only 75% elapsed during the year. So, but 5 out of 6 is 83%, and so from a real, you know, straight, what we call the linear estimate, we're right on track. But what this shows is the adjustments for seasons, because in the wintertime we would expect less consumption than we expect in the summertime. And this is also the same analysis that we presented to your board on October 11th when you did the approval of some rate reductions, and we've given you updates at least on one occasion as billing information has come forward. Well, as of this time, with 5 out of 6 billing periods done for the fiscal year, consumption has come up. We can see the green bars in the November through January and the January through March billing periods are significantly above the green line. And what those indicate is simply that we had a dry winter. And so people were using more water during our dry winter. As it's tracking right now, we are running above targeted revenues by about $85,000 this year. Wow. And so I would expect at the end of the year we'll be above revenues. Then we also show the cumulative difference since the rate structure went into effect in 2015. And on a cumulative basis, all 3 years combined, we're short $116,000. And that was, again, because while the drought was in effect, we had a 20% estimate of conservation, and the community was conserving more than that. So in 15-16 and 16-17, revenues came in short. And so for the three-year period, we're still short. But the good news is that for the current fiscal year, revenues are up, and we're catching up for some of that prior deficit. What that does is it sort of begs the question as to whether or not the board wants to consider reducing rates further in this transition period. And at this point in time, I hesitate on doing so because we know that some of that additional consumption was because we had a dry winter. And we're still short over the three-year period. In October, we said we would report back to your board, so certainly you have the discretion to give us direction today. But my recommendation is that we keep where we're at right now, see how the summer months go, and then reconsider it again after the summer months in October again. But That's really your board's call.
Are we looking at the potential? Is statewide, is there sufficient water so we aren't going to roll right back into a drought again in, say, 4 months from now or 5 months from now? I mean, it's nice and green right now, but...
Yeah, state water deliveries right now are at 20%. There's people are estimating that that is going to get bumped up because it's been at 20% for a while. We have, based on that 20% allocation, means that we have 300 acre feet of state water available this year, and we have 750 acre feet of state water in storage. So we currently have 1,050 acre feet, and we're using, you know, maybe pushing somewhere under 800 acre feet a year. So the quantity that we have in storage on state water is good. That's kind of avoiding the question of the statewide drought, but the idea is that our state water project, water and storage, and even our current year allocations are fine.
Yeah.
When we turn to local conditions and the low reservoir response plan, discussions are going on right now with the county and the contractors about updating the low reservoir response plan. But based on that 20,000 acre foot threshold, that when Lopez Dam goes below 20,000 acre feet, then the drought, the low reservoir response plan kicks back in. And with the recent rains, it does that date, you know, the worst case scenario has been pushed into next rainy season then.
Okay.
So there is a possibility that Lopez Reservoir could get down to the 20,000 acre feet by the end of the year. But at Zone 3, we're all sort of wait and see to see what kind of winter we're going to have.
Because I know from reading the San Francisco papers, all the big dams are pretty full. Shasta and San Luis Reservoir, they're all 80% plus.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of water up north.
I mean,
it would appear there is.
Yeah, and as you know, the surface reservoirs in many parts of the state are much healthier. Lopez didn't come up nearly as much as some of the other ones did. And then, of course, groundwater conditions throughout the state are still challenging. So there is a possibility that Lopez could find itself back in the, you know, the drought provisions before the end of the year. That might be another good reason to, you know, hold off on further reductions in the consumption rates and see how that goes. But I just don't want to put too much credibility behind these numbers yet, since we had a dry winter.
Yeah.
And
I really like the idea of being able to again reduce our rates. Although, particularly with the cumulative shortfall that we in fact have, I can see the wisdom of holding off on that decision until October. And I think that's what we should do. And then hopefully in October we will have had some rains and we can reduce the rates.
Well, and I certainly think that if the consumption in the summer months stays up, that would be a good reason to, you know, consider another step in the rate reductions.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would assume then we have no action, right?
That's correct. No action required.
Okay. 9D update on the lagoon water line break and emergency efforts of board directions, with board directions as deemed necessary.
And Madam President, I was wondering if this might be a good time to take a quick break in the meeting.
Sure, we'd be happy. 7 o'clock, let's take a 10-minute break.
Thanks.
She was not feeling well. Ready to go? Okay. 7:10, we'll resume the meeting.
And just for purposes of the minutes, we should note that Vice President Austin was feeling ill and left during the break.
Thank you. We'll move to item 9D, update on the lagoon water line break and emergency efforts with the board direction as deemed appropriate again.
Thank you, President White and members of the board and Celia, and thank you. At the last meeting, your board was informed of the waterline break underneath the Oceano Lagoon and provided some general direction to me to initiate some emergency efforts. That direction was really pretty limited. We will have to come back prior to proceeding with any construction and adopt certain findings consistent with the Public Contracts Code, as well as consistent with some of the environmental regulatory requirements. So as just a quick preview, I wanted to make sure to make that statement. I have two handouts, and the first one is what Cannon Associates prepared, Mike Kielborn. I asked them for a proposal and have conceptually approved it. They're looking at our insurance requirements, but they started working on it anyhow. And what it does is it illustrates a cross-section of what is called a horizontal directional drilling, where the new water line would be essentially drilled underneath the lagoon from the streets on both sides, so that in theory we don't have to step on any wetlands or get into any of the protected areas. It's a pretty common technique. And I think that I handed out a number of points summarizing our current status and then didn't keep a copy for myself. Okay, so there's 11 points here that summarize our emergency efforts that I want to run through with your board. And this is important because whenever an emergency is declared, we have to come back to the board on a regular basis and give you updates on the status of that emergency until it's taken care of. So the first point is to make sure that notifications were provided to all the other and really the resource agencies on the day of the event. Tony made sure to make those basic notifications. And the communication with the Division of Drinking Water is ongoing. That's also important because when we were out there the other day, we think we actually identified where the pipe is broken. And there might be a teeny, teeny little bit of water that's still leaking through because it has chlorine in it. Then Tony's communicating with Division of Drinking Water. But I saw as he did his field test for chlorine, where if there's a lot of chlorine, the water's going to turn real pink, and there's just a tiny, tiny bit of pink in there. So we know that it's not a significant leak, or what I would deem to be a significant leak, but we're making sure to communicate with our regulatory agencies. Third point was, just a reminder, your board did authorize emergency efforts on March 28th, but as I previously mentioned, additional board action is anticipated. So on number four, and it's included in the board package, awarded a purchase order of just over $13,000 to Terra Verde for environmental permitting. And so that's where I took the emergency authorization and issued a purchase order that was above what my normal authority is on $7,500. And they are preparing a memorandum outlining the requirements for emergency repairs and notifications with environmental agencies. And what that's going to be important with is then so that legal counsel and I can look at the situation and make sure that it does comply with the emergency, that it properly is an emergency from the perspective of the environmental resource agencies. And it's somewhat of a close call because even though the line is broken, we are providing service currently to all of the properties. The reason why I think it is an emergency, again, subject to the final review, and that final review has to be done before we let out a public works contract on it. But the one water line that's serving the island area goes through the airport. So if that line were to break, We don't have the ability to get in there and do immediate repairs because of it's an airport, FAA restrictions, airplanes flying around. So we have an imminent threat, that's for sure. Other reasons why is that we've already been hearing individuals in the beach properties concerned about lower pressures and lower volumes. And as we're going into the summer months, as the vacation rentals get rented, we see an increase in demand. So very concerned about the system as that happens. But right now, in my mind, it's especially because we have a water line that's going through the airport. Once we have the memorandum from Terra Verde on the conditions that we have to review, then I'll sit down with legal counsel. The fifth point is award of a purchase order to Cannon Engineering for engineering and surveying report. Let me back up. The reason why I selected Terra Verde is because Terra Verde has done a lot of the biological work in the lagoon area and the county's work. So they're very familiar with the lagoon have simply just done a lot of work there. And obviously having somebody or a firm that's already knowledgeable about the site is important in emergency efforts. Similarly, Cannon asked them for a proposal on engineering and surveying support because they performed what's called a bathymetric survey, and that's essentially what is the a bath. The lagoon is a bath. So what's the bottom of the bathtub look like underneath the water? And I'll speak to the illustration that that they provided on the horizontal directional drilling a little bit. But, you know, they have the understanding of the underwater topography. And so they could also, and showed that they could hit the ground running on because of their existing knowledge of the lagoon and the site. They also happen to be, coincidentally, working on our water resource reliability program. So we're working with them on some other items. So it fit well for that reason as well. So the preferred approach appears to be horizontal directional drilling. And that's where the illustration here shows both in the vicinity of the lagoon where the line is, and then it shows from the Cannon bathymetric what the bottom of the lagoon is. And horizontal directional drilling is exactly what it says. You set up a drill rig or equipment, and you go underneath instead of straight down. And what this illustration does is it shows that the drillers, they really like to work with an arch. Mike Kielborn with Cannon has already done some engineering calculations, has already estimated where they think that they would be in a horizontal directional drilling. I believe what he said was we'd probably be about 15 feet underneath the bottom of the lagoon. And that's important because in the next bullet point, number 7, even though that we're not going to be walking on to any of the wetlands or the environmental sensitive area, the challenge is that when you're doing this horizontal directional drilling, the driller has to push mud in. As they're drilling, they have to push mud in there. And part of that is the process of getting the drill rig to work and everything. As they're pushing that mud and working the drill, there's a possibility that that mud could frack out or frack up and into the lagoon. With 15 feet of cover, the likelihood is extremely low. But that's the sensitivity from an environmental resource perspective. So the contractor, and this is pretty standard, we've already looked at the project that Arroyo Grande did underneath one of the creeks for horizontal directional drilling. And it's pretty standard then for contractors to develop what's called the frack out contingency plan. So you have observers, and we may very well use Terra Verde to have an environmental monitor to observe on the site. And if there's any visual observations then of mud coming up and into the lagoon, then they stop the rig and they get out there and they remediate it and get that mud out of the lagoon. Now, in our particular situation, it's kind of interesting because the lagoon's not exactly pristine. But we still need to follow all the protocols. And so these protocols are, you know, they're pretty well established. And what I've learned in the last week or week and a half of working with the environmental and engineering is that the resource agencies are really pretty comfortable with horizontal directional drilling. So, for example, Fish and Game only requires us to give them a notification. And we don't even technically need to do the notification in advance, that in an emergency situation, we could simply notify them if we have frack out. The recommendation is to provide the advance notification. And so, again, more work to be done, but we would intend on doing that. So when we were on the site visit with both the Tara Verde, the environmental specialist, as well as Mike Keelbone from Canon, the engineer, we walked the paths. There's a pretty well-established path down to the lagoon, both from Aloha Court as well as from the west side. And we think that we saw the pipe or the end of it. And that's kind of important because we were wondering whether or not there was a possibility of repairing the existing pipe. We were speculating that we doubt it was buried very deep because it was constructed in 1980, and we figured that most likely the construction technique would have been trenching up to and close to the water and then laying pipe across the water and using backhoes or something to try to get it to settle down as well as it could. But we didn't expect that we were going to have 10 feet of cover or anything else that we would want under modern today's construction techniques. Because if we did have a lot of coverage on that existing pipe, then a possibility would be to send a camera down from one of the streets, inspect the pipe from in the inside, and to see if we could do any repairs on it from interior. There's a couple of techniques. But both in discussion with the engineer as well as the observations that we had, we just don't think that it's worth the time and effort to cut it open and to do a temporary repair, that it would still be relatively expensive, and then you just have a temporary repair. And so the direction that we're heading in right now is to do, you know, a permanent repair based on current construction and horizontal directional drilling. So with that, Tony has begun communications with contractors, and has been working on timing of contractor availability, which could be 1 to 3 weeks after we tell them that we're ready to go. As a result, it's really the environmental permitting that is the schedule challenge right now. And as we get closer, and I should back up, it does not appear that we need to get environmental permits unless we have to do so from the Coastal Commission. And so Tara Verde is verifying Coastal Commission requirements right now. But it's still making sure that we address the environmental issues. We also have to get the surveyors out there to make sure that they clearly define the edge of the public right-of-way and the public streets so we know where the contractor can work and where the contractor can't work. Also, point number 9, I've initiated coordination with state parks. I've both kept Dina Bellman in the loop on emails as well as discussed it with her. She is currently researching any paperwork that she might have regarding easements or access that was approved when the line was placed in 1980. There's also a possibility that there might be a paper street there because some of Oceano was subdivided and paper streets were put in all sorts of different spots where streets aren't going to go in reality. So there is a possibility that our pipe is in that where it's at right now based on a dedication of public right-of-way and a paper street.
What's a paper street?
Oh, so a paper street is just sort of the, you know, general slang, I guess, where in old maps, especially, like Oceano was originally subdivided in like 1898. Mm-hmm. And there were some other subdivisions after that. But these sometimes they're referred to as antiquated subdivisions. And what would happen is that somebody would own a certain territory. And as you might imagine, in 1898, they owned a lot of territory. And they simply knew what the outside boundaries of their properties were. And they put down lot splits and streets as if it was all just open ground and there was no constraints, like no water or anything else like that. And then it gets recorded with the county surveyor. And they're interesting, and these antiquated subdivisions are interesting, because sometimes they're, you know, those maps that are recorded in official maps and everything show that there should be a street someplace, but it's never been built. So that's what we generally refer to as paper streets, because they exist on the paper of the map, but nothing, you know, so we don't have an actual street that goes through, you know, at the bottom of the lagoon. But when paper streets do exist, or when what they call the underlying lots of an antiquated subdivision exist, they can provide property owners or the public with some unexpected benefits. And so,
access.
Pardon me?
Mainly access.
Yeah, and sometimes that's going to be restricted by based on non-use. There's lots of different rules that are way beyond my body of knowledge. But the key here is we have a pipe there. Right. So if there is a paper street there, then we can obviously demonstrate that we've been using that public right-of-way, and we clearly have. And the point there is important, because we either need to get permission from state parks, or we have to be able to establish that we already have prior permission or a prior right to do so. And so, you know, again, I've outreached to Dina Bellman. She's doing research from her side, is being, you know, super cooperative, and I've CC'd her on the different purchase orders that are being approved so that she's aware of what we're doing as well. Then point number 10, coordination with the County of San Luis Obispo has been initiated, and confirmation of road encroachment requirements is in process. So not much more to say on that. And then point number 11 is that we're intending on providing door hanger notifications to the residents on both sides by the end of the week. Regarding pending project efforts. Depending on what we hear back on the Coastal Commission, we think we might be able to initiate the project in the next couple weeks. Yeah. Again, depending on what we hear from the Coastal Commission. And, you know, there's some other things that we need to work out. But because we could be there in a couple weeks, we want to get the notification out to the property owners, because there is going to be some access issues, mostly on the west side near the Beast. Over on the Loa Court, when we looked at it, there's a portion of the roads that are not county maintained. And, of course, we looked at driveways and how much room would we have to actually work without impacting anybody's driveway or circulation, and could we store materials. And in the Aloha Court area, we actually look like we're probably in pretty good shape. On the west side, there's a corner and an intersection where it might impact traffic a little bit, but everybody would be able to get in and out of their houses. It just would have circulation. So we want to give everybody a little bit of an advanced warning that there's going to be a project in the near future, and then we would give them at least a 24-hour notice before the contractor actually got on board. Early indication is the contractor could do all the underground work in one day. Whew. Yeah.
That's amazing technology.
It is. And then there would be another day in order to tie everything up, and maybe a third day to make sure everything's cleaned up and looking good. But with respect to the technology, and so my prior experience with horizontal drilling was on the Nacimiento Water Project. There's a couple of different areas with bigger pipes. We don't know that Napomo CSD just did a big project underneath the Santa Maria River. But on the Lake Nacimiento Project, that job was all done. Contractor was back in town because I think he was trying to get a couple more nickels out of us on a claim or something like that. And as we were talking and wrapping up our discussions, his company was doing a big horizontal drill in the Seattle-Tacoma area, where they were going underneath from the mainland and then underneath, I'm not sure, I was just up there, but I don't know the name of the bay or the waterway that's, you know, right adjacent to Seattle. But it's a big big crossing, much bigger than the Santa Maria River. And he pulls it up on his iPad or, you know, whatever it was, and he has got everything that is going on with the driller who is working on the job right there. And he even knew that they were about a quarter inch off of, you know, their drilling, because it's monitoring how close you are. Should back up. It also monitors pressure, so that as the mud is going through, if there's a frack out, they will notice it before it. They should notice it before it even comes up, because they'll start losing pressure as that mud starts spreading. So he's showing me his iPad. He's got all this data stuff and everything else, and then he, you know, kind of blows my mind away, and he said, "So, if something happened to my operator right now in Seattle, as he's in San Luis Obispo, he could take control of the machine from where he was at." So you got to love technology, right?
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah.
I can't believe it'll only take like 3 days.
Yeah, and just one day for the drilling is what they're estimating. So.
Yeah, so the real delay will just be the permitting, if we run into permitting problems, right?
Yes, that is. That's the thing we need to really make sure to address. The good news on the permitting is, you know, most of the resource agencies understand horizontal directional drilling. Army Corps doesn't have concerns with it. Fish and Game, they don't have concerns with it. They know that the contingency plan is to monitor for frack outs. They know that the pressure of the equipment is going to provide a really quick preliminary, you know, hey, you might have a problem here. And then our environmental specialist from Terra Verde, when we were down near the lagoon, he noticed how shallow the water was in that area. And he was like, that's great, because if you do get any fracking out, the ability to, what they'll do is often take something that's big and circular, drop it around it, and then take a vac truck and then, you know, suck all the mud out and everything.
This is how far? 400 feet?
Yeah, approximately 400 feet.
Yeah.
Well,
we talked about the tulies, you know, and everything else, and he said, well, one of the, you know, normally those tulies are a big obnoxious problem, right? And hopefully it will get resolved someday. But in terms of fracking out, he says it's great because it really reduces the likelihood of a frack out. All the roots that they have, you know, will kind of contain it a little bit. And
underneath, yeah.
So
then we're going to take the old line out?
No. You just abandon it in place. And whether pipes are in streets or whether they're in this situation, the standard is you abandon it in place. Tony had mentioned that there was a contractor working for a gas company or that hit two lines. One was abandoned and the other one had a fiber optic in it. But for the most part, you leave them in place. Clearly what happened in the fiber optic, because it was in an old transite pipe, they repurposed that pipe. you know, and so that's pretty common in fiber optics and other, where now we take an old water line or a re-sewer line, you clean it out, and then you run wires through it. So sometimes they create a benefit of that nature. But generally speaking, it's more of an impact to try to take them out.
Yeah.
And especially a line underneath the lagoon. Yeah, we don't have any expectation that we would be required to take it out because, again, leave it alone. It's passive. And then if there's something that happens in the future, dredging or whatever, and somebody hits it, well, then they take it out at that time. But it's a little bit more, there's a bit of an analogy to archaeological sites, and that is that you just kind of want to leave things alone as best as you can.
Well, especially if you've got trees or anything above ground that you want to protect. This is a 12-inch line or an 8-inch line?
It's an 8-inch, and we might replace it with a 10-inch but of a different material, which is HDPE, and it's simply it's got a thicker wall to it, and it's a little bit easier for the drillers to be able to pull it, and it's got a little bit more flexibility. But the inside diameter would be comparable to what the inside diameter of our 8-inch is. And, so.
Anybody else got any questions?
No.
So I don't think we need any.
No action is required.
Okay.
So I didn't read the specific requirements on emergency declarations. I just know that we have the requirement to come back and report to your board. Whether it's at every board meeting or once a month, I'll double check.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to be reporting back every single board meeting until we have it resolved.
Was it once a month you have to do it when they had the Juanita and all the earthquake?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's once a month.
That's my general recollection as well. Sometimes with Community Services District, you have to be careful because your second meeting in the month might actually be more than a month from that other meeting, right? So
maybe every meeting will do it. Yeah. Okay. Moving on, business item 9E, consideration of ballot and voting for the San Luis Obispo County Local Agency Formation Commission alternate special district member representative.
And Madam President, members of the board, there's two individuals who had been nominated, Daniel Burgess with Heritage Ranch Community Services District and Ed Eby, who is with Napomo Community Services District. You're not required to vote. If you are so inclined, we do know that Ed Eby is South County. As far as Heritage Ranch Community Services District, it's also a district that they're a client of yours, aren't they? So there's a tie there. Scott Deffield, their general manager, used to work with me at the county. And those probably all sorts of reasons why it shouldn't really weigh in on your vote. But it's really the discretion of your board.
Well, I was at the San Luis Obispo Special District's annual meeting when both of these gentlemen introduced themselves. And I believe Mr. Colwell was there. Ms. Angelo was there.
Lori was there, yeah.
Yeah, Lori was there. And I just wondered
Special
if anybody
Districts
had...
Special District's Association.
Yeah, I just, that dinner at Avalon, I wondered if anybody did have an opinion on what we want to do. I would entertain a motion if somebody...
I don't have a motion. Each of them, I couldn't distinguish between either of those gentlemen one way or the other, is the truth of it.
Well, they both appeared to be very competent to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed's down here in South County.
Well, that is a factor.
And we do have things that we work on with them, like trying to figure out how to balance the groundwater basin and other things. And those don't always go smooth, so maybe this is a little bit of a good faith.
We can extend our battlefield.
We could do that, Director. I don't know what that means, but we could do that.
Well, I make a motion. I'm going to make a motion that we support Ed Eby from the Napomo Community Services District as the alternate special district's member representative for San Luis County Local Agency Formation Commission. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Fine with me.
Opposed? It carries 4-0, 1 absent. Thank you. Moving on to, we now have a hearing item, 10, a public hearing to consider bids received for the district's permanent utility relocation work required for the County of San Luis Obispo for the airport bridge replacement project and board approval to perform the work. Among options that include utilizing the county contractors, awarding the work to the district's low bidder, or adopting a resolution which must be approved by a 4/5 vote to reject all bids and to perform the work with district employees as allowed by the California Public Contract Code Section 22036 with the associate budget adjustment of up to $125,000. Mr. Ogren.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, you took public comment on all the business items at one time. This is a hearing item, so I would recommend that you just open it up to public comment.
I'll
real quick.
Make a call for public comment, noting there's no one in the audience. I will return.
Thank you. Before I get into the discussion, the recommendation is going to be the continuance of the item. We were informed by the county yesterday, formally this morning, that there is a protest on their bidding. And so they have to resolve the protest. In our agreement with the county, the reimbursement agreement, we have to act within 7 days of them giving us the official low bidder. If we don't act within that 7-day period, then the assumption is we will go with the contractor, the county's contractor. We've provided them $115,000 deposit so far. That's the, you know, the basic rules right now is that we don't have a low bid determination from the county because it's in a protest procedure. But I just really want to cover a couple points because we're going to have to, and we might have to have a special meeting depending on when we get their notification. The staff report had identified that your board has the discretion right now of going with the county's bid, our bid, or self-perform. And what I want to do is to enter into the record some important information. Because the public contract code provisions that we're working under, in order to self-perform, your board would have to make certain findings. In general, it's that it's more economically beneficial for the district to self-perform. And certainly from the cost estimates that we've gotten, that is true from an economic perspective. But I also want Tony to weigh in a little bit on benefits, impacts, and other issues associated with self-performance. But first and foremost, there is a multi-page document. There's 6 pages that are stapled together, and I'm just going to read the title of each page. The first one is the engineer's opinion of probable cost, and that's the basis for the bid package. So DPSI, our district engineer, had estimated, and this is for the permanent relocation work. I should back up a little bit. The temporary relocation work, which is the rerouting of the force main on Airport Drive, it has to be done by the county's contractor because during the duration of their work where they're dewatering the lagoon and putting in the structural spans for the bridge, there's going to be a temporary sewer line in there. And the county's contractor needs to do that because during the duration of that work, they have to protect that sewer main. And if they break the sewer main and it leaks into the lagoon, then they are the ones who are going to be responsible for that. That cost estimate did come in higher than we anticipated as well, but not as bad as the permanent relocation work. So, again, the handout that we're doing is focusing in on the permanent relocation work because that's the work that your board has discretion with regard to how to implement it. So the first page is the details associated with the engineer's opinion of probable cost. And that phrase is used because it's legally important based on case studies, case law. But the idea is it's the engineer's estimate. And so in our bid package, we had rounded it up to $71,000. And the reason why we want to enter that into the record is because to self-perform the work, the code says that we have to reevaluate our cost estimate. So in order to reevaluate the cost estimate, I want to make sure in the record what the original cost estimate is. The second page, which is really the more significant page, is the detailed cost estimate that we put together to self-perform the work. And we'll go over that in a minute because that's the one I want to spend more time on. The third page is our estimates of personnel costs. And both the second and the third page, do you want me to?
I'm lost.
Okay. So we provide, we distributed a 5-page handout.
I got it now. Yeah. Oh.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't part of the original board package because, you know, we got all this stuff at late last week. And so, again, the first page is the original estimate. The second page is our estimate to self-perform that comes up to $106,000. I'm going to come back to that and talk about it in a little bit more detail. But that is called a project ledger card, and that is the format that the public contract code, the manual, provides for. So we're making sure that not only are we following the public contracts code, but the specific worksheets that the state controller's office includes in the manual, the applicable manual. The third sheet is our basically our calculation of our personnel costs, and that calculation again conforms with the state controller's manual. And then the fourth and fifth sheet are simply some of the materials quote that we got from Corex, where they take a look at the plans and they do what's called a takeoff, and they look at what the materials would be required. They come up with the quantities and then give us a cost estimate.
Yeah.
So these are all important to enter into the record, which we're doing right now. No formal action is necessary. We just have to get it in there. And then what I want to do then is focus on that second page, because even though the original engineer's estimate was around $71,000, we've calculated about $106,000 to self-perform. But we think that's really conservative because we have 20 days to do the work, which should be more than sufficient. So we're assuming that everybody's going to work on it for that entire duration. Tony, Casey, Jason, and the fourth individual who's going to be hired in the relatively near future. So we fully loaded it as though they all four are working the entire duration. And then in terms of direct cost for equipment, we have dump trucks, backhoes, service trucks, factor jets, saw cutters, blades, compactor, shoring. And those rates, again, consistent with the state controller's manual, are based on Caltrans published rates for those different pieces of equipment. We have the ability to calculate our own rates, but we really wouldn't be able to do so because we don't have the type of equipment pool that would really justify all the details that we would need to be able to do. I did do those calculations earlier in my career at the county because the county has a big, huge equipment pool. But even on the larger equipment pools, it becomes a little bit challenging because the factor of how much do you utilize the equipment factors in. So it's clearly just much cleaner, much easier to go right to the Caltrans published rates. And I should mention that with respect to labor, equipment, and then the third category, which is material supplies and other force account costs, on all of them, we apply a 30% overhead factor. And that 30% overhead factor also comes out of the state controller's manual, but it's specifically provided also in public contract code 22017. And that's the idea that all of these direct costs aren't the only costs that are incurred, that there's got to be overhead associated with everything. And that 30% factor may be high, may be low if we were to try to calculate it for the CSD specifically. But again, the contract code and the manual gives us the option of just simply applying that 30% overhead rate. So those, again, these cost estimates we feel are pretty conservative. At $106,000 are still about $30,000 less than the low bid that we received. So I don't think that there's any challenge from a public contracts code perspective of our right to be able to self-perform. One of the requirements in order to do that is that we were required to notify our low bidder of our intent to self-perform. And so we sent out certified mail on Friday to Decal Engineering, and then Carrie followed up today and also made sure to communicate that they had, in fact, received the notification. And the idea is you notify them the intent to self-perform, even if your board decides not to do that, then they've been notified. They did not attend the meeting today, which would indicate that they weren't going to challenge us on it, although I guess they still could. If we got challenged on the right to self-perform, then the California Uniform Cost Construction Accounting Commission, CUCAC, would be required to have a hearing, I think within 8 days of their notification. Because if CUCAC found that we violated the public contracts code in terms of self-performance, then we would, they could stop us from self-performing. Again, because of the spread differential between $138,000 and $106,000, I just don't see that as being a possibility. And because the contractor hasn't shown up, I don't think that they would necessarily be motivated either, although you never know. In the event that there is an appeal or a complaint to CUCAC, then since I'm on the CUCAC Commission, I'd have to step down. And then what's also interesting is tomorrow night I'm going to be at the city of Santa Fe Springs because the commission found the city of Santa Fe Springs to be in violation on this exact issue, where they took in bids, they rejected all bids, they later self-performed, but they never gave notifications that they were going to be self-performing. So they kind of failed on the procedural issues. We didn't even opine on their cost issues because procedurally they had failed. So anyways, tomorrow night I'm going to be down at the city of Santa Fe Springs because I was one of the two people who looked at the details of that particular case and then made recommendations to the commission as a whole. So I've been working with Santa Fe Springs on that. And I really thought that, you know, if we found them to be in violation, then we better get it right, you know, for Oceano. So we got the notifications out. We've, again, to summarize, what the code says is we're supposed to reevaluate our cost estimates. So the original opinion of probable cost that DVAIS and Doug Grosshart put together are basically task-oriented, and they include both labor and materials, and you can't always sort of distinguish between the two because that is often how the engineers will develop estimates. And then we've gone through, in part of our reevaluation, to look at the various details of labor and equipment, tied them back to Caltrans rates, and kind of crossed all our T's and dotted all of our I's. In general, we do not believe that it's going to cost us $106,000 to self-perform. We wanted to be very conservative, and even on a conservative basis, it looks like we would be well underneath the contractor's estimate. In my own mind, I was wondering why the contractor's estimate was so high. And even on the county's side, two of the three it's in the report, but of the three bids that the county received on the bridge replacement, this work is a supplemental or an additive item. It's not part of their base bid. One of the contractors came in pretty darn close to what the engineer's estimate was, which is just under $70,000. The other two were at $170,000 and $210,000. So the bid results were really pretty wide, from $70,000 to $138,000 to $170,000 to $210,000. And in some situations, we might try to drill into more detail as to why there was differences in those type of estimates. There may have been the idea that some of the contractors thought that they might have to repave the trenches after installing the new water and sewer lines. But that would have been an error on their part, because when the county completes the bridge project, they're going to be, you know, repaving both of the approaches. That's the only thing I could think of. With respect to potentially dewatering the trenches, or finding archaeological artifacts or having to do some other things, we said exclude those from your bid, because, you know, the likelihood was very low that any of those things would happen. And if you did then encounter those, then we'd have to deal with those as a change in work, or, you know, change orders and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the idea there is exclude them from your bid. We'll deal with them if those problems are encountered. But if you had them, include them in their bid, then it would inflate all the bid prices. And we might have seen some high bids again just from contractors who didn't look at it closely enough. And that's not necessarily surprising, because what they're really focusing in on is a $2.2 to $2.5 million bridge project that they're working on. One of the second low bidder has protested the low bid. I'm not sure what the basis for that protest was. We don't have a right to protest, because in our agreement with the county, our remedy is to do the work ourselves or to use our own contractor. If the county finds in favor of the protest and awards then to the second lowest bidder, then I'd probably come back with the recommendation and have them do our work, because their sub, again, had a cost estimate of just under $70,000 for the work. Mm-hmm. Clearly we have to wait for the county to resolve their bid protest. The last thing that I want to share, which is not necessary for the record.
I have a question
sure.
Before you go on. How much is this going to delay this project? Because don't they have a time?
Oh, yeah, it won't be significant. The county's bid protest procedures, which do not go to the Board of Supervisors, very similar to the bid protest procedures that your board adopted for Oceano last meeting, mm-hmm. All within the Public Works Department. The Public Works Director will make those determinations. It should be quick. I would not be surprised if we're having the special meeting before your next regular meeting.
Okay. Because it just seems like, you know, this has got the whole project has a time factor. Doesn't it have to be done by August?
They have to be out of the water. So the contractor has to dewater the lagoon underneath the Air Park Bridge, which is always going to be fun, because you put a whole bunch of sheet piles, or actually whatever the contractor wants to do, but he's got to pump the water out. And he has to be out of the water by October 31st then.
Yeah.
So coordinating the specific activities, we've had a lot of discussion. If that contractor starts getting really tight on their schedule, we could find ourselves working on the sewer line to make sure that that's all done, so that they can pull the temporary sewer line out by October 31st, and then maybe have it go in subsequently and work on the water line. So those are the types of details of construction that we'll be working on. There's pre-construction meetings where you sit down and you identify your risks associated with construction and start getting ahead of the game in terms of what sometimes we call the rocks in the road. Again, I don't anticipate too much, but I wanted
I'll just shut up.
Yeah, so there is a timing constraint, and it's got everybody worried. On this handout, what it does is it shows the difference between our cost estimate for self-performing and then what we would actually be out of pocket. Because when it comes to our staff, Tony and the crew, they're already incorporated into the budget, right? And the equipment, like our dump truck and our backhoe, those are already paid for, or we're making payments on those. There's a couple pieces of equipment that we would have to rent. And so what I show is this additional column that for each line item, then I say, well, what would be out of pocket? So the 30% overhead charges wouldn't be out of pocket, because that's all part of, you know, ongoing district cost. Labor would not be out of pocket. There is some chance that they would end up working some overtime, so there might be some out of pocket there, but right now that's not the assumption. But most of it's going to be in the materials, supplies, and then the other force account work. So out of that $106,000, the estimate is that it's approximately $46,000 that would be really out of pocket cost. So there's, it's pretty significant savings on self-performing.
Is there any consideration of, while our crew is doing that, of something else sliding by that would be a hidden cost?
So that's where then cost? I wanted to have Tony jump up a little bit, because
shut up.
It's kind of three different areas that we want to address. What we don't want to do is look at something like this and say, oh, look at the dollars and then make a decision based on dollars.
Right.
The first question is the capability to do the work. So, Mr. Maricino, How do you feel about the crew's capability to do this work?
Without a doubt, I have the utmost confidence in the crew to do the construction of the water and sewer, and the commitment to the district, it's there also. Whether it's coming in on a weekend or working longer hours or changing the schedule to 4:10s, whatever it may be, I have the utmost confidence in them.
Is this a kind of a project that you'd like to do?
It's definitely something you like to do, but you do have your concerns. Yeah.
So the liking part was the third component, because I think that there are some benefits to self-performing in terms of, you know, looking at what our experience production rates. Sometimes it's interesting to be able to work on something different.
Oh, absolutely. You enjoy starting and finishing a job and looking back at it and say, hey, we did this.
Yeah.
Take pride in your district and your work.
But then that other area is the concerns.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure Tony talks a little bit about his concerns as well.
No, we definitely have concerns. We still have to sample the system weekly. We still have to customer service. We still got to maintain, you know, the district while we do this project. And if something else comes up, lines do break, things go wrong, I do have those concerns, yes.
So we've been talking about some of the ways in order to address, I mean, any type of work that we're doing, especially construction work, the issue is anticipating where your challenges are going to come from and making sure that we know what we're going to do. So with four individuals on a site, part of the issue is if we have an incident, a line break or something else that's going on in the system, the ability to pull off two people, one or two people, individuals, to be able to go and see what that other system challenge or problem is. Because to take the whole crew off, one of the things that's killer in construction especially is starting and stopping, mm-hmm. right? So if we have an immediate problem, the idea is, okay, who are the two who can pull off and at least go and look at what type of a problem we're encountering. But at that point in time, we're going to pretty much be reliant on a contractor to come in. And, you know, Baker just came in and fixed the sewer pipe on break on Pier Avenue. Crandall Construction's done work for us. There are a number of, you know, good local contractors, as well as support from City of Aurora Grande has supported us. FRM has helped. In fact, FRM helped with the recent sewer line break as well, because they were taking flows from the lift station and transporting them directly to the sanitation district while the repair was going on. So making sure all the contractors are lined up, making sure that they know that we've got extra work that we're doing and may need them for on-call services is one of the contingency plan efforts that we would definitely rely on. Another one is overall sequencing. What happens if the county's contractor gets behind schedule? And so I sort of spoke to the idea that we need to anticipate that we might have to focus on the sewer line and get that done first so that the contractor can pull the temporary facilities out of the lagoon. Let's see, surveying and alignment. We figured we'd be using DPSI. There's a few details associated with getting into an existing manhole, so we will use some subcontractors on a very limited basis. Underneath the state controller's manual, some of those subcontractors are still under the definition of force account, so that's still allowable. Existing priorities. So... Yeah. Casey takes the lead on the jetting program, so he figures he's going to get a jump on the jetting program and get a lot of that accomplished before this work needs to be done.
Correct. Take care of the SSMP, the obligations we have with the state.
This won't be, you said, I think, 20 days, but it won't be 20 days in sequence.
It could be 20 days in sequence, but it may not be.
Temporary... You have to put temporary line in and then a real.
Oh, so the county's contractors do all the temporary work.
That's right. That's right. They do that.
Yeah, because they have to maintain responsibility for those temporary lines.
Yeah, so it would be the permanent lines would be putting. So it wouldn't be till later in the summer.
Yeah, or potentially even October.
Yeah.
And so one of the thoughts is that, again, in working with the county's bridge contractor, are we going to have access early at some times? Because we would love to be able to go there and start extending some of our existing lines, whether it's water or sewer, start getting them at least closer to the bridge, earlier as opposed to later, so that when it comes crunch time, then we don't have as many pipes to lay. Those are some of the early thoughts that we have on terms of addressing, the challenges of the project. We've even gotten, Doug Grosshardt is even going back and confirming with the bridge designer on little things. The analogy here is that if you go to build a house on a concrete slab, usually your foundation is by a concrete company. And they put up the forms and everything, and they put all the rebar in it. And so it's kind of like the way a bridge works, too.
Yeah.
But the steel and the... I'm drawing a blank on the name. But when you go to frame your house, you've got your... Why am I drawing a blank on it? But bolts. You have your anchor bolts, and they're embedded in the concrete.
Yeah.
So normally your concrete contractor doesn't put those. He's got all the forms in and all his rebar in, but your framer actually puts in the bolts for the sill plates. And so Doug's contracted because in a bridge, similar, we have to have hangers that are embedded in concrete that our pipe then is loosely attached to.
Hangs underneath the bridge.
Yeah, it's underneath the bridge. So who does that?
Inside the bridge.
Yeah, it's inside, and by inside what that means is because you can imagine there's structural support to the bridge, and in that structural support they put holes so that our pipelines can go through those holes.
Oh.
And then in addition to the pipes going through those holes, then we also have hangers in order to keep the pipes, stable and everything else.
Yeah.
So who puts in those metal hangers and everything. So, again, coordinating with that, and the answer is the bridge contractor will put that all in for us. So the project seems, pretty straightforward for a three-person crew. It's a big project. I like the idea for experience training. I think it would be really interesting for them. One of the nice things is that we don't have any laterals. So it's purely, pipe. You don't have to worry about, versus if we're on, any of our other normal streets and we go to do a line replacement project, then we're having to deal with, how are we connecting all the individual properties. So we don't have that complication in this. And also, the entire bridge is going to get shut down. So we don't have traffic control issues. So there's, some... what convenience is associated with this particular project.
Who's the inspector or the guarantee that those holes in those hangers will be put into proper places? Do you just make sure, or how do we make sure that the contractor is doing it correctly?
So on the bridge and those things, those are going to be the county construction manager, the county inspector's responsibility, because those are all part of the bridge construction.
So it won't be our responsibility.
Yeah, not on the bridge. And so the design work of the bridge has that all, well laid out. And you can bet that they don't want to get that wrong, because if it did, it requires... If they got it wrong and it costs us extra money, then they have to pay for it. With respect to all of our pipes, though, our inspector is responsible. There are pipes, and so we've just got to, DPSI is going to have to go out there. And one of the things that's pretty common, though, is you test your pipes as you're constructing them. You can do pressure tests in a couple of different ways, but before you bury them, you make sure they're pressure tested and all the joints are well sealed and good to go.
Is it Is there going to be another access for the people that live over there on the island?
It's not the bridge for the island.
Oh, okay.
It's the county park and lagoon
one.
Where the ducks are at. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, it's that one. I was kept thinking it was the one over on the other side. You're right. Okay.
What's the other road? This is Air Park Drive.
This is Air Park. Yes.
Air Park.
And that one is. I keep drawing a blank on it.
Lakeside. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Andrew? Yeah, I just want. I mean, it's impressive to hear, and I'm happy to hear as far as you know the confidence level of our team, and I think as you said, Pablo too, that for a smaller district like we are, I think this is a big project, and I can only imagine for you guys, would love to get a crack at it and be able to do that from challenge perspective, expertise perspective too. And it was a little bit to President White's point, too. I mean, I was thinking the concern is just if you guys are having to work full-time on this project for, 20 days, and it does sound like we have the ability to have our consultants and stuff to help out with the other work that we have. I know that that's a concern. I think it's a concern to me, too, because it's like, you guys are always busy already. That taking on something like this. The other thing, too, is the operator in training. That's that new position, right? Isn't that a part-time position?
It is a full-time permanent position.
Okay.
The idea is it's 50% funded by garbage and 50% by the other utilities.
That's right.
And so if the individual ends up being dedicated to this job for a while, then they'll spend more time in the year at some other point in time in the year on the garbage-related efforts.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to double-check that. Okay. Yeah. I think it'd be great if we can do it, but, yeah.
I like Tony's confidence in moving forward on it. Even with the concerns, I see you moving forward and being successful.
Oh, without a doubt, but we still have concerns. It's really three guys, and we'll get a fourth guy and hopefully train them up pretty quick, and it's time management
and planning
and a lot of planning.
Yeah. Planning,
yeah. Absolutely.
Well, and you might see in the budget for next year, Tony is concurrently lobbying for a new service truck. So I think there's part of him that figures that
so
they
savings,
might just earn it.
Whatever savings we can get the district, maybe we can negotiate for a service truck.
I think he deserves a service truck anyhow, and I don't want him to feel like he has to do the work in order to get a new service truck. I think it's really important both for your board and myself as the general manager to be really clear that this is Tony's call. And whatever it takes to support him and the crew in doing this, we need to do. To me, we do have money that in the budget this year that we're going to have through budget savings. We could hire the contractor to do all the work. Again, today is not the day to do the decision. It's got to get continued until we find out who the county's low bidder is. Tony, Jason, Casey, they're the ones who are out there doing the work. I think it's got to be based on, what Tony believes, and then that we're all here to support them.
Yep. We probably got the smallest crew in the five cities, I tell you that. But
I'd stack up those.
You're good.
I'd stack up those three against any three fire. I mean, any three utility crew workers that are out there.
your mic was on.
And the board members will take turns bringing lunch.
Right? Yeah, I think that's fair. So the recommendations, which your board, we do need to take action because this is a public hearing, and that is to continue the item to a date that is within 7 days of when we receive notice from the county of who the low bidder is on their bridge project.
So I'll move that we continue this item being sure to take action within the 7 days as required from the date of the county notifying us.
I'll second.
Yeah. It's been moved and seconded. Do we have to have a roll call vote on this? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0, 1 absent. It would have had to, there was another resolution. Moving on to...
The resolution was at the... the resolution, which has to be required, has to be approved by a four-fifths vote, is if you make the determination to self-perform.
Yes, and that would come within 7 days of...
Yes.
Okay, we got her. Okie doke, received written communication.
The two items. One is we have a handout on some of the correspondence and web postings associated with the Five Cities Fire Authority. I think everybody has a copy of that. Did we hand that out? Okay.
Yeah.
But before talking about that a little bit, I think I also forwarded communication to all the board members on videos that will be taken for the Central Close Blue project. And Holly Trechner with Water Systems Consultants had indicated that that they're going to see what elected officials might want to go out to Pismo Beach and make some comments, and they're going to put a clip together about VIPs and statements on the Central Coast Blue, the recycled water project. So if you didn't get that email, let me know. If you're interested in going out there and maybe be part of a video, let me know. I think I actually blind copied everybody. The email was directed to Carrie and asked her if she would be interested in wearing Sammy the Steelhead costume for some videos. I think she might decline. Again, I believe it's on April 23rd. But if you're interested in going out there and providing some quotes on the recycled water project, they would be more than glad to have you. But if nobody is interested, that's okay too.
Jim, good chance to get your dune buggy in there.
Well, I'd love to do it, but I'll be out of town.
And I also have another commitment on that day.
It is Monday at 2 o'clock, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. That might be difficult for me.
So, Mr. Colwell, you're not going to be at our next meeting.
I will not be at the next board meeting.
And when are you? I'm only asking because if we're having to schedule a special meeting.
Yeah, I'll probably be out of town from, I think Saturday is the 21st of April for like 8 days.
Okay. I'll just make sure to keep that in mind because we do have to have four. The resolution, if we were to self-perform, has to require four votes. Yeah. And so we'll be really cognizant of when we get that notice from the county. And that's kind
and
of
I should
there.
Be available by phone.
And that's a possibility. Are you going to be... in the
I'm
country?
I'm over in Utah, so okay. I don't know about reception and all.
Well, we'll double check. My understanding is that the board has done vote. Well, maybe Director Angelo, you might have participated in a movie in a meeting from out of state before.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have participated from a River Annie hospital before.
Okay. So, and then we've got special noticing requirements that you would have to post some notices. You'd have to participate in a location that's available to the public. And so we could work out those details if necessary.
Or you could just not go.
Oh.
Ooh, it sounds like maybe the president hasn't been given, she hasn't given your permission yet?
I guess not.
Don't have your hall pass.
Neither may I.
I've written no excuses.
Simon says, yeah.
Okay. The second one, which is on here because it concerned me primarily because we have some of the employees of Five Cities Fire Authority who are posting items to the web, which I don't think are necessarily constructive if we're looking at a potential special tax election. So I talked to Chief Lieberman and the other city managers today and indicated that it is very important, as we have uncertainties with Five Cities Fire Authority and we're looking at potential special tax elections, that the individuals from the different communities are supportive of each other, because ultimately we're all in it together. The other, Director Colwell has responded on them, but the other thing that's a little bit disheartening about these comments that are being posted on the web is that they were done after April 1st, and they don't reflect what your board's action was on March 28th. That, in fact, is your board has taken action to try to make sure to avoid a budget impasse for next year. And we're the agency that's actually coming up with the recommendations on how to, you know, develop at least a solution for next year. So I've given Fire Chief Lieberman some feedback, and I wanted to make sure that as part of correspondence it was on your, we shared it amongst the board members in case you wanted to talk about it at all. But I think that our representative at Five Cities Fire Authority probably also should be talking to Lieberman and perhaps even making some comments or discussions during the Five Cities Fire Authority meeting on the 20th.
I don't know. Is it? I made a couple of responses to the Facebook postings that I saw, but I don't know if that's inappropriate or not. I was doing it myself, not as a member of the board, but a lot of people know that I am on this board. Is there anything inappropriate in that?
Well, each of your board members certainly has that freedom to speak on various topics. The issue is, are you representing the board or not? And that's really where you have to be more cautious, right? And everything that I've been seeing recently, whether it's the South County Sanitation District issue or your comments here, to me don't, you know, as board members, you're not overextending yourself and saying you're representing the district. But it's always something to be cognizant, careful about and think about. You are elected officials. People will, look at what you're saying. But on all those points, I think everybody's been well within reason on the various comments, whether it was here or Sand District or whatever. And so the benefit is that sometimes when these comments go without being responded to, then they can take a life of their own. That people sometimes will presume a statement to be true if there's not a rebuttal to it.
That's what I saw, and I saw a number of errant opinions being discussed by other people, and I didn't want to respond to those. One of the comments about kicking the can down the road seemed a bit of an affront to this board, because this board, as well as the general manager, have gone out of their way to try to engage both the other members of the Five Cities Fire Authority to make progress in resolving these issues, going back a matter of months, starting in January of this year. And we've tried with limited success to get the other two agencies to engage. And certainly the finger-pointing that Oceano is not paying their fair share is just blatantly incorrect. We've paid our fair share timely, entirely through this process. And it was just at our last meeting that we signed the $202,000 check to the fire authority, which was our timely assessed portion. And it seemed like some people don't want to recognize that.
And part of my concerns is that when we see elected officials from other agencies making statements like we're not paying our fair share, or that they speak to the salaries within the district, the challenge becomes then others who are working for their agencies, you know, become more empowered to say the same things. And so the proliferation of fake news is more likely when the elected officials of the other agencies make those statements. So, you know, I think that if the opportunity arises at Five Cities Fire, it would be good to remind the elected officials from the other agencies about good protocol, because I've seen it before in a lot of different situations. Many years ago, we worked for a county administrator who ended up getting terminated. And internal to the county, there was a lot of idea that, well, it's a monkey see, monkey do. When the county administrator starts going off and making statements that, you know, are somewhat out of bounds, then their staff feels empowered to do the same thing. And that's part of what leadership is about, is to, you know, leadership means that individuals are going to follow, and if you're making inappropriate statements as a leader, then you're going to find that others are making inappropriate statements.
And so, unfortunately, I believe that that's what's been happening on some of these issues, yeah. And it's repeated in these Facebook posts that we've seen recently and historically.
Yeah. I'd like to add, too, because Director Caldwell and myself are a little bit in the same boat this evening, that and I agree a lot with what actually both of you have been just saying, because I think it's important for us to remember that, you know, whether we're representatives for our agencies, whether we're representatives in our communities, we're engaging with others, whether it's in the public or whether... You got to look at the intention and the motivation behind it. When I read these comments from yourself, as you've been describing, the goal here is to try to set the record straight, as well as to make sure that throughout the term fake news, which is fairly kind of, you know, we hear it all the time nowadays, but as well as to have different perspectives, and it's not to diminish or to, you know, disparage any other elected official that we serve with from any other agency or the other communities themselves. It's more a matter of the childishness is something that I get frustrated with, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's in meetings. I mean, we're all sitting here, I think, because we want to try to do the best we can for not only the community, but we're a stone's throw away from our neighbors that are from another community. I mean, we're neighbors. We're all in the same area. So I think it's unfortunate that there's such polarity sometimes, that it's just, it's you're on that side and we're on this side, and, you know, if you think like the person that's on this side, then we're nailing you to that wall. I think it's unfortunate because it's such a narrow-minded view, and we need to see things that we're all South County together. Yes, we all have our own agencies and communities that we represent or that we're citizens of, but, you know, if there's been issues in the past, sometimes the very far past, or we're in a different year, we're in a different state, we have new challenges that we got to tackle and accomplish, and if we can do it together, I think the more people that have good intentions and motivations that want to look at issues and talk and collaborate and work together, I say the more the merrier. So I understand why you posted what you posted, and I hope that even from what I said gives a little bit of perspective, which in disagreements are fine, but a little bit of background too from my letter to the sanitation district last week. So anyway, that's it.
Well,
I can keep talking.
With 80 years of experience living in one place, I don't bring your more gentle view to it, in that I know how many times that certain community that lives, that exists to my northeast, has created challenges for these smaller communities. and how many times that I personally thought that possibly other communities around us were looking at our water supplies and how those water supplies could be diverted from disbanding an Oceana Community Service District and giving it all to the county. And there's just been, and I don't look for those challenges, but they just jump out in front of me. And I'm not, that's not my personality, but I will say that, you know, it just so many times that they have been nasty to Oceana in little ways. And it's other public people in little ways. And right now I won't even say what I'm angry at now, but I'll deal with that directly. But, I mean, there's just little slights that it's constantly, but it's always Oceana. From the time I was in elementary school, it's always kick Oceana once more. So maybe I just have a different attitude.
Sure.
So there. Anyway, let's move on to the meeting. Late received communication, future agenda items. Got anything to add?
I know there's more than just those, but one meeting at a time, I guess.
One thing I wondered, Andrew, and it's how much of your job is going to be out of town? I'm just thinking if we need to realign any committee appointments. Or you got them covered?
Well, I think the only thing I can think of is with the SEIU, because I think that was something I was a part of, so I don't know.
Oh.
Or is that, would that be in the future? I don't know.
No, I do need to double check that, yeah.
Okay.
That would be my only question.
Because Zone 3, I'm still, it's Thursday evening, so I really don't have any issues there.
Yeah.
Normally.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if there was a need to put that on the agenda sometime. I guess we can look at it if we need
I'll
to.
I'll double check
it.
And I'll talk with both you and Director Brunet.
Okay. Any other items to come before this board tonight? Seeing none, I would request that.
I'll give the motion that we adjourn.
Meeting adjourned.